This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte.
Folks at the Ivy Tech Community College Valparaiso campus are working in many respects with the state of Indiana in offices to help create more opportunities to educate people, to get them ready for the jobs of the future, of the 21st century in particular. And in this case, we're talking about IT, information tech. And with us to talk about the program that is now being set up through the Ivy Tech Valparaiso campus is the chancellor of Ivy Tech Valparaiso, Otso Sikorski. And thank you for joining us, Chancellor, on Regionally Speaking today.
Glad to be here, Chris.
It's an interesting program that's, I guess, what, 10-month long. It's going to help participants to get the necessary skills that they may need in to work in the various jobs in IT, in information tech. Will you tell us more about the programs that the campus offers and how this state Earn and Learn program, or SEAL program, is going to help out?
A little bit about IT, what is being offered. We call it the School of Information Technology at the Ivy Tech Community College, and in particular here at the Valparaiso campus. We have several different programs, anything from the networking, cybersecurity, data centers, those kind of things. But this 10-month program, what we have developed in partnership with SEAL, which is the State and Learn program, through the state of Indiana, it's all about how we're going to be able to recruit students and going through the program at the same time offer hands-on, we call it work and learn experience. And this program, it's called that within the information technology, is that fiber optics program, certification program. So this program, what is being designed is to provide necessary skills to the students so they're going to be able to work with the telecom or brand industry in Northwest Indiana in particular, because we all know the fiber optic networks is expanding tremendously in pretty much in all communities here in Valparaiso, Chesterton, Porter County, Lake County, everywhere. And it's super important for us to provide these kind of programs and training opportunities for the students to earn those skills.
What types of jobs are available here in Northwest Indiana in particular that this particular Ivy Tech program is going to be able to help provide for people, men, women, children, I guess, young, we're talking about high school graduates in this case?
Absolutely. So these are for the network technician, fiber optic technician, fiber optic cable installers. So those are the most common positions what these telecom or broadband companies they're offering. And that's what we wanted to make sure that the students will get the skills for these positions.
Have these jobs been offered, or are many of these cases new technology jobs, or are some of these jobs been around for a while that this particular program will help better prepare students to be able to look into?
These are relatively new skills, mm-hmm. I can call that way. Fiber optic, it's all the time, it's involving technology, and you have new equipment when it comes down for splicing, installment, and those kind of things. So we wanted to really make sure to the students to be able to operate on the latest technology, on the latest equipment. And again, I'm just mentioning, fiber optic splicing and installation, because that is the most important at these times.
Are there many employers here in Northwest Indiana, or a growing number of employers, maybe I should say, that are involved in this type of work in broadband, certainly, and in this particular program, fiber optic cables and the like, that will be looking forward to having more people come on board if they get the education?
I can certainly mention at least a couple of those. NITCO, it's right here in Porter County, but they do the work in Lake County and soon probably in LaPorte County, when they're installing fiber optics networks in our communities. and they are one of the best partners. Even before this program, we partnered with them, and we did short-term training, maybe just a few days training for the fiber optic splicer installers. And again, great supporter from NITCO, and they're excited because of this partnership. They are serving on the program advisory committee for this program, so they know exactly what kind of training we offer, what we do, how we are organized, and it's out there. So extremely supportive of Ivy Tech.
Now, since this is a new program, at least here in Northwest Indiana within Ivy Tech Community College in Valparaiso, what does the program look like? Has it been set up with classes or will be set up with classes over time to get the students ready and be able to look towards, once they finish the program, for the jobs that are ahead?
Absolutely. So, as I said, this is a 10-month program, but consists of a 16-college credit. Basically, that it's seven courses is being scheduled, and typically we are running these courses in the 8-week format session.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's going to be included the hands-on experience, the internships. That's all about this, as we called, earn and learn experiences. And the other exciting part is that this program is being recognized through the Workforce Ready grant offered through the state of Indiana, and more specifically, taking Hoosiers to the next level, which means this certificate, it will be paid fully, 100% through the state. So those individuals who they're interested to come and join the program, it will be tuition and books free.
So, that's great.
We already started with this program just last month, so to speak. I forgot it's September already.
Mm-hmm.
We started on August 18th, the first 8-week sessions, and our next start is going to be on October 20th. But right now, we are enrolling for the second cohort. So definitely, I like to use this opportunity and to invite all those individuals interested for these kind of high-paid, high-demand positions to join us and go through this, again, 10-month program, but it's free, so to speak, and being able to get those nice-paying jobs.
Chancellor Sikorski, does it look that if this program does well during the 10-month SEAL program, that this will become a more permanent part of the Ivy Tech Community College curriculum?
The certificate, what we are talking about, that is already in the books, so to speak, on Ivy Tech. We already have this certificate. But what is the difference, and we will continue to do, we are more intentional for the portion on the hands-on earn and learn or internships experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know and we recognize the gap when it comes down for the students when they are getting the skills, the education and knowledge in the classroom and the labs at Ivy Tech. It's extremely important for them to get that real hands-on experience. And this kind of partnership offers exactly those kind of experiences, which is really, really important for the success for the students as well as for the employers. So when the program is over, we are truly hoping and the students are hoping that they will be hired by these companies.
If anybody would like more information about this program that's underway now, knowing that there'll be more classes coming up from Ivy Tech Community College in Valparaiso, how can they find out more about it?
They can reach out via email at valparaiso-admissions@ivytech.edu. Again, it is valparaiso-admissions@ivytech.edu, or they can call us at 219-476-4701.
Otso Sikorski is the chancellor of Ivy Tech Community College in Valparaiso. And we're talking about a new program added to the curriculum. It's underway now in a 10-month SEAL program that stands for State Earn and Learn Program, offering through the state of Indiana a chance to learn more about Ivy Tech's overall IT program and the jobs that are being available once the students make it through the class, dealing with a network technician, fiber optic technician, or fiber optic cable installer. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. We're all concerned about PTSD. Many service members and veterans are coming back, in many cases, from Afghanistan and other places around the world, and are suffering from these same problems. And we have with us a gentleman who has served time in the Army. He's retired from the Army, and he works with a nonprofit that is dedicated to helping heal PTSD in veterans and in first responders as well. Former service member Dan Jarvis served in Afghanistan and is going to talk about the issues that veterans coming back from overseas, in particular from Afghanistan, is dealing with the issues of PTSD. And Dan, thank you for being with us on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Chris, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with your community.
Well, if you will take the time, tell us about your time serving overseas in Afghanistan.
Sure. I served in Afghanistan in 2011-2012. It was a one-year deployment. I was with a striker brigade out of Fort Wainwright, Alaska, and served in the role as a combat infantry squad leader. During the deployment, half my men were medevaced out of country, not to return to the battle space. One of my soldiers was killed in combat, which I bore the guilt and responsibility of his death. I stepped on a pressure plate, detonated an IED, so I was injured. My squad, all in all, had about 8 Purple Hearts, including myself. And the traumatic brain injury, you know, caused a myriad of issues all on its own. And then at the end of the deployment, my mother passed. So I ended up getting a Red Cross notice and leaving Afghanistan with about 3 weeks left with the deployment remaining. Mm-hmm. It's been difficult to watch kind of what's going on in the last couple of weeks, how the situation has devolved so rapidly. You know, we made partnerships with our Afghan counterparts in the Afghan Army and Afghan police forces. We did a lot of humanitarian aid missions into the villages of Afghanistan, providing food and clothing and you know, materials to help them kind of manage and get through their day-to-day lives. The biggest thing, though, I think what we're experiencing with a lot of the veterans that have gone to Afghanistan is they feel let down by their own government. It's heartbreaking to watch what's about to unfold. You know, as the cameras pull out, we're not going to really be able to see much of what's going on.
Right.
And still with, you know, Americans in Afghanistan after the military withdrawal, I don't know, you know, who developed that plan, but, you know, somebody should be held accountable for that. We should have gotten all civilians out and our partners. You know, we made promises to many of the interpreters that when the time came that we were to leave, that we would take them with us, you know, because their lives and their family lives are now literally in jeopardy. And I think we're going to see some brutal things taking place over the next month in Afghanistan.
And we've had a chance to talk with a Northwest Indiana resident who served in Afghanistan about the same time you did, actually, and had help from an interpreter, and he's doing his best right now to help bring that interpreter and this interpreter's family out of Afghanistan. So it's a tough situation for a lot of people. And I'm sure now that we have these returning soldiers coming back from Afghanistan, although they may or may not have had some incidents that in turn would lead them to PTSD, they're going to have to deal with the same problems that you did, right?
Sure. You know, PTSD is a distinct issue. You know, we look at it like it's a disease or disorder, and at 22-0, we look at it more as an injury that can heal. And, you know, what we've done is gone to the roots of something called neuro-linguistic programming, a process that was developed in the early 1980s. A similar process to what we use was a visual and a kinesthetic disassociation, where we can actually neurologically disconnect the emotions from the memories. It doesn't change the memories. It actually, a lot of times, it'll clear them up, but the emotions connected to it will no longer be accessible, and the brain will then go into a process called memory reconsolidation, and people's sleep patterns will return, their cortisol levels will come back to normal, they'll come out of the adrenal fatigue. But then the other issues is there's a lot of negative emotions that are really driving a lot of the veterans right now, because some people that may not even have post-traumatic stress are dealing with now what's becoming a moral injury in the abandonment of the people of Afghanistan.
Right.
And the abandonment of the men that we served with, you know, our Afghan counterparts, knowing what's about to happen. And the fact that we left the amount of military hardware to arm the Taliban is beyond the pale. So we're we're connected with a lot of veterans. You know, I did some work with a combat infantryman the other day. He deployed to Afghanistan. He was also in Iraq. And we helped him disconnect the trauma response to his PTS. And he was like, I really wish I would have known about this 2 days ago, because he just lost his best friend to suicide who served with him in Afghanistan because of what's going on. And that's our biggest fear is, you know, as the waves of emotions overtake the service members, the veterans, that, you know, it's in that 90-second wave of flooded emotions that they pull the trigger. You know, we got to get to them to help disconnect those waves of emotion so that they can become healthy and productive again. Because hands down, 100%, you can fix PTSD. It is no longer a lifelong diagnosis. We're using it primarily in a peer support model. We do have some licensed mental health counselors that we've trained, but the reality is, you know, these are very simple processes that we just teach veterans to do with other veterans and first responders, that we can actually help heal our brothers and sisters, you know, without them having to go talk to a licensed counselor or a clinical psychologist. And we don't charge a penny to anybody that we work with that's in our community. So veterans, you know, first responders, police officers, firefighters, you know, active military, and their families, to include their children, will work with the entire family structure to help get the family back on track. Because unfortunately, if one person in the family is traumatized, whether it's the husband or the wife, and they have kids, it's going to affect everybody in the entire family.
Will you talk about your nonprofit and the alternative therapies that you're able to take advantage of that will help service members, veterans, as well as the first responders that you get to talk to?
Sure. So the nonprofit we developed, I started it actually back in April of 2018 without even any real solutions. It's like, because I fell through the VA cracks through their treatment, mm-hmm. and I realized, you know, I'm a fairly intelligent guy. If I'm falling through the cracks, there's probably tens of thousands of other veterans doing the same thing. So we just kind of wanted to be a stopgap, you know, stand in the gap and provide services to the men and women who put those uniforms on for a purpose bigger than self and their families. And we ended up, after the onset of COVID, you know, a lot of the philanthropic dollars dried up. So we just started developing our own work. We have a trauma resiliency protocol for PTSD and acute stress. It doesn't have to get to the level of post-traumatic stress. And then we use an emotions management, which allows the person to reframe negative emotions like anger or even anxiety or panic attacks at the root, where you'll no longer be able to feel those old emotions pertaining to those triggers. They can still feel emotions, but it's not connected to something that may happen when they were, you know, 10 years old or 25 years old in combat. So what we do is we train veterans and first responders to be able to do this on a peer-to-peer level, and when a request for help comes out, we have a case manager that does an assessment, so they score them out, and they'll place them with the appropriate coach. The work can be done remotely via Zoom or any kind of video messenger system, platform, Skype, whatever, FaceTime, doesn't matter, and then we run the processes, depending on how many sessions the person needs. The coach will, you know, do the final follow-up, and if they're good, then the case manager will do a final assessment, show their post scores. So we've got data that show, you know, hey, somebody might have scored 65 out of 80 points towards PTSD, and then they're now at 1 or 2. So you know that there's a big neurological disconnect, and they're actually getting back to healthy, and they're not feeling those waves of emotions any longer. So, yeah, we have people that'll reach out to us through our website, 220.org. That's 220.org. There's a Get Help option, and it'll go straight to the case manager. We'll get them into contact with somebody through a crisis. We'll get them in contact with somebody within an hour or less. Sometimes it's 15 minutes. We just got to find one of our, you know, 140 coaches who can work with them immediately. And it doesn't really take long to make that connection. And you know, and like I said, we'll work with the entire family. We'll work with the kids. We'll work with the spouses and the veterans or the first responders and their spouses or children. It does not matter.
Well, Dan, it sounds like that you and others that work with 220, which is a nonprofit that's dedicated in helping heal PTSD in veterans and first responders, are going to have a lot more work ahead as more soldiers come back now that they've come out of Afghanistan and probably realize they're having problems that are very similar to what soldiers like you had when you were serving in Afghanistan. Thank you for being with us to talk about the nonprofit you work with and the fact that you're going to have many more jobs ahead to deal with as soldiers come back from overseas. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Chris.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. PFLAG is the first and largest organization nationwide for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people, their parents and their families, and their allies. And there is a PFLAG chapter here in Northwest Indiana. We'll find out more about it and how, if you're interested, you can get involved in the meetings. With us to talk about PFLAG here in Northwest Indiana is Elizabeth Menning. She's the president and the support group facilitator for PFLAG Crown Point, Northwest Indiana. And Elizabeth, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate you having me here.
Well, I gave a very quick introductory message as to what PFLAG is all about. Will you tell us more about the organization, if you can, nationally? Certainly about the organization here in Northwest Indiana.
Absolutely. And so PFLAG, a national organization, has over 400 chapters around the country. It's primarily designed to support the families, friends, and allies of the LGBTQ population. But since its inception 50 years ago, they have grown to expand more and more segments of that population, and now it's just completely inclusive. So we advertise that it's support, education, and advocacy for family, friends, allies, and members of the LGBTQ community of all ages. We're excited to be starting to offer in-person meetings now. But before I get into that aspect, I just want to clarify that even though we are PFLAG Crown Point, Northwest Indiana, There are two other PFLAG chapters in Northwest Indiana. One is Michigan City, and one is Valparaiso. So, you know, if anybody has any questions about any of those, they're free to either reach to me or to PFLAG.org, the national website.
Do you find that because you have two other accompanying chapters that you have a lot of people involved in all three or both of them or maybe two or three of them?
No. So each one runs independently. We're tied together, you know, through PFLAG National. We do collaborate on different events, and we are just starting a PFLAG Indiana monthly meeting. So all of the Indiana chapters can get together and talk about things like best practices and challenges, do some sort of, you know, education amongst the leadership teams, that type of thing. So we're excited about that new development.
In some of the meetings that have been happening all along, maybe, but certainly since the Crown Point chapter was created, what things get talked about the most, it seems?
Acceptance. Both somebody accepting that someone close to them identifies as LGBTQ, or even that somebody themselves is identifying as LGBTQ. So acceptance is the biggest topic, and it's got many aspects. People who are not accepted have, you know, much more trouble with mental health issues, homelessness, substance abuse, that type of thing. And for people whose family doesn't accept them, it's, I mean, just catastrophic, can be catastrophic. So trying to understand, you know, a little education goes a long ways. So sometimes people are afraid of what they don't know. And if they don't know anything about the LGBTQ community, then teaching them a little bit about how, you know, the difference between gender identity, gender expression, sexual orientation, being an ally, all that can really, really help. But that does seem to be the prevalent attitude. And Chris, the joy that people have when they either fully accept who they are or they are fully accepted by those close to them is overwhelmingly just magnificent.
Do you find in talking with people at the PFLAG meetings, certainly we're talking in this case about family members who have sons or daughters who have either come out or maybe they haven't yet come out as being gay or bisexual or transgender, that the discussion, the one-on-one discussion, maybe I'm thinking of in most cases, at the meetings themselves seems to help cover some of the issues that they fear the most, the problems that maybe they face on a daily basis?
Absolutely. First and foremost, knowing that you're not alone in what you're going through can be a tremendous help. When we feel like we're alone and isolated, I mean, just everything seems bigger and we don't know where to turn. So finding a group where you aren't alone is a huge thing, and that goes, you know, for any type of support group. We have, I mean, all it ranges, the whole gamut of, you know, feelings and emotions. There's anger and rejection and sadness and fear. There's grief. There's happiness and acceptance and joy. And I mean, it ranges. So parents come to us in, you know, many different ways. And what we're just really trying to do is educate, support, advocate, and enable people to be able to live as their true authentic selves.
We're talking with Elizabeth Menning, who is the president and the support group facilitator for PFLAG, Crown Point, Northwest Indiana. And they have, of course, unfortunately, because of the pandemic, had to do a lot of virtual meetings, but now have opportunities to get people involved in person. Will you tell us first about how the in-person meetings are set up and if anyone is interested in coming to an in-person meeting, where they can do so?
Absolutely. So, yeah, starting in March 2020, we've been running virtual. Some people find that's easier either because of their work schedule or school schedule or, you know, other obligations. Some people, unfortunately, find it more difficult because they may be living in a place where they can't attend virtually. They don't feel safe. A lot of what we do is try to create that safe space. So it's with excitement and trepidation that we're adding in the in-person component back in. The only trepidation is the whole COVID thing, and that's a topic for another discussion. We're going to follow all the protocols, and masks are required, and social distancing and sanitizing. But Lake County Library, the Merrillville branch, is going to be co-offering these meetings, and we're going to be meeting in a larger meeting room. First Thursdays is for adults and older teens. Younger teens can come if they're accompanied by an adult. But we do have also the teens meetings and parents meetings and a totally virtual meeting on the third Tuesday. Teens and parents meet on the second Tuesday. So this meeting Thursday, September 2nd, is going to be virtual and in person.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be doing that hybrid meeting to give, you know, people more options to attend. And we're pretty excited about that. It starts at 5 because the library hours are a little earlier now. Hopefully that won't be too much of a hindrance to people. And they can either reach out to the library on their event site or to us directly, info@pflagcp-nwi.org, or by calling or texting 219-216-1356.
And you have to contact the library so that at least get registered for the in-person meeting. They want to know about it, I'm sure, and probably to make sure that the room that they choose is big enough.
Yes, well, we do have the big room, but they do request registration. It's not required. Mm-hmm. You do not have to have a library card. You do not have to live in Merrillville. It's open to everybody. And we do have information that we'll be pushing out. I've already sent some emails out. We'll be posting it on social media as well.
Well, Elizabeth, thank you for spending time talking about PFLAG, about the organization that is PFLAG Crown Point, Northwest Indiana, and about the return to in-person, in this case, in-person and virtual meetings, beginning with the first Thursday meeting coming up this evening, which will, as you mentioned, going to be at the Merrillville branch of the Lake County Public Library. That's along U.S. 30 or West 81st Avenue, if you choose to call it that, in Merrillville. And you can contact the library online and by phone if need be to get more information and to register. It's just they want to know that you're showing up for the meeting and the coming into the library in particular. And we hope that the return to the in-person as well as the virtual meetings will help get more people who have concerns, family members who are concerned about being lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, to get back in, get a chance to feel more comfortable about themselves and be more accepted. Thank you very much for being with us to talk about it today.
Great, thank you.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today and for this week. Our thanks to the Valparaiso Chancellor of Ivy Tech Community College, Otso Sikorski, to retired Army veteran Dan Jarvis, to Elizabeth Menning with PFLAG Crown Point, Northwest Indiana. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be back with you